TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. Get in the know. Non-stop Vikings talk. It's Purple Daily on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
All right, Purple Daily, state of the Vikings offensive line here with Cronin, Mackey, and Judd. And before we do that, a quick thank you to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated has been standing behind Minnesota business owners for over 100 years based in Owatonna, Minnesota. And this is probably the most important year ever to have an insurance company that you trust and have trusted resources during this pandemic period. So if you're interested in finding out more, federatedinsurance.com is the place to go to find your local contact, your local representative. And remember, at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, it's our business to protect yours.
Football.
Welcome in to Purple Daily, Mackey and Judd. Courtney Cronin from ESPN.com. She covers the Vikings and joins us on Fridays on this show. So yesterday, Courtney, we dove into the latest comments from Gary Kubiak about the Vikings offensive line. And I think that's going to launch us into just a wider ranging state of the Vikings offensive line meat and potatoes discussion here. We're hoping you can help answer some questions for us.
Okay.
And question number one is, do you buy that the Vikings have locked in four out of the five starters here already before they get into any of these abbreviated team workouts? Or do you think that that's some kind of an offensive line smokescreen?
I mean, I could see it both ways, but I also look at the time. It's August 7th, and what? That's the season's essentially 1 month away. Like, how are you going to try out all of these various offensive line combinations, have the wide open competition at guard, like Rick Spielman said in April? Like, we didn't know the point we were going to be at here. So in April, it made sense to be like, yeah, Pat Elflein, you're fighting for your job. You weren't very good at left guard last year. We needed an upgrade. But to me, it kind of seems like this was the inevitable as we got closer to camp and realizing that these guys aren't going to have time to figure it out. They've got to get their vets in and go. Like, honestly, at this point, it just kind of feels like, you know, this might be the best of all of their options simply because they're in a time constraint right now. And getting somebody up to speed like an Ezra Cleveland, like a Drew Simia, I mean, you'd probably expect Simia to be a little bit further along. Dakota Dozier's there. That would make sense, but you know, maybe they're just kind of like, hey, the zone blocking scheme worked with the five guys that we had last year where Sands, one of them at right guard. Let's just find another right guard to plug him in and, you know, kind of go from there.
So the thing that Coop said that interested me the most, Courtney, was when he talked about the fact that, and he did not make this clear, okay? So if you've got the interpretation here, tell me and I'll back off. But it looked like on the Zoom call, and since you guys don't have access right now to practices or walkthroughs, he left it open-ended about the fact that Cleveland was working at guard, which I think we're all like, oh, okay, not shocking. But he also insinuated, I guess, that he's working at right guard. And if that's the case, help me here, because I don't understand moving a left tackle to the other side of the line to teach him a position that's going to take a lot of work that he is probably not going to play long term. Help.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. The Vikings Twitter account tweeted something like saying like Ezra Cleveland's career begins at right guard in the NFL. Yeah, here it is. So, I mean, it comes from their official Twitter account. That's really the only indication we had because Kubiak said that it was
whenever they send a tweet out, I always just hear like, "Well, the Vikings have tweeted."
Great. Yeah, it's it would make sense because that's what the official team account says. But I was a little surprised by it too, Judd, because this guy is going to be your franchise left tackle. You didn't draft him to play right guard, but Riley Reiff, according to Gary Kubiak, he shot down the notion that Reiff was going to move inside to guard because here's how it would have made sense to me if you were going to do that. You take your franchise left tackle, the guy you drafted to play left tackle, you play him at left tackle day one. You move Reiff inside to guard, you're with him for another year, and you say goodbye, Bradbury, Simia, O'Neal. But clearly, I think that they just feel a time constraint there, and it's kind of like, well, guard is the biggest need this year. They can get by with Riley Reiff at tackle. I mean, Riley Reiff's an above-average to good tackle on a very regular basis. He's just expensive and the price is not worth, you know, the product in a way. So they realize that they're going to have to move on from him eventually, but to get him reps at the twos, because the way that I kind of inferred this, I'm like, all right, he said he's next to Blake, which means Blake Brandel. I think he's a 6th round tackle pick out of Oregon State. And so I went back and looked. I'm like, all right, well, Blake Brandel finished like the last 32 games of his career, something like that, at left tackle. But you have Rashad Hill. So what do the twos look like? I think you can infer that Hill is over at left tackle, Brandel's over at right tackle, and then Ezra Cleveland's over at right guard with the twos, because Drew Samia, it sounds like, is working with the ones. So Gary did say that he's like, yeah, we want to get him in a spot that he hasn't had a lot of reps before. Well, you pick the right one. He's definitely not had a lot of reps there. I mean, but they did say that they're kind of like going to settle him in, and maybe we'll see. I would assume we're going to see a change. They're going to have to try some different combinations. It can't just be like four and then add one in. Once they do get to padded practices, because they're still in the walkthrough stage, it's still very early. I mean, but to learn different hand placement, and it's different from playing guard on the left side of the line, or the tackle on the left side of the line, and playing guard on the right side, that's a lot to take in a 4-week period when you miss 10 weeks of the offseason program.
So when I talk about offensive linemen, it's hard. Like, I've told Judd this, interior play, like, I lean on Pro Football Focus for a lot of this stuff because, like, the only time I'd be able to tell you if, like, Drew Samia in his 40 snaps last year was doing a good job or bad job is if I saw him getting trucked and Cousins went down. And so Pro Football Focus, I lean heavily when we talk offensive linemen. And last year, according to PFF, only 2+70 grades overall offensive line play up and down the roster regardless of snap count. Riley Reiff and Brian O'Neill. And just for context, it's a 1 to 100 scale, a 70 grade. So O'Neill was 70, Reiff was 71. Think of them as like real-life Madden ratings for the audience. 70 is fine. Like, it's kind of league average. It's passable. Everybody else was below 65, according to Pro Football Focus. So I guess my question to you, Courtney, is at the end of this season, if they play this season, at the end of this season, who do you think will be regarded as the Vikings' best offensive lineman?
Probably Brian O'Neill. I think that he has got such a high trajectory from where he was drafted to what his body looks like now compared to where it was 3 years ago, or, you know, two seasons ago in 2018. We talked to him about that the other day, just like, you know, how far along he is. But also think about it. He had that full off season. They had, you know, him, Mike Remmers, and Rashad Hill working at right tackle in 2018 with Tony Sperano in OTAs. And that, I'll never forget that. Like, he was such a different version of himself when he started OTAs to where he came back in training camp even. And by the time week six came around, I think it was that Arizona game when he had to start. That was a big deal because he physically looked the part, like, more than he did weeks before. So I think that he got the benefit of having the progression throughout the NFL, throughout his first 2 years in the NFL, to where he's at right now. And I can really appreciate just the fact of, like, what time means to an offensive lineman. Like, you need that time to, you know, to learn not to have your chest exposed. And I can still picture Brian Robeson slapping his arms down in the night practice and just kind of like welcoming into the NFL. I mean, Brian O'Neill has really grown and developed as a really good right tackle. And I think that that's, you know, to me, that's going to be the no-brainer answer. I mean, Garrett Bradbury, how much better can he get this year? I think that it's still going to take some time because he's undersized and you're asking him to, like, kind of, you know, reach in this zone scheme. And he's, sure, he's athletic, but he's smaller and he's going up against, like, really good nose tackles and interior defensive linemen. So unless he gets bigger or stronger, like, that's going to always be an issue. So I do think, you know, Brian O'Neill is probably the safe answer there. And I think it's the expected one because you know what you're getting in Reiff. You know what you're getting in Elfline. You know what you're getting for, you know, at least what you can expect to get in Bradbury, and right guard's a mystery.
Right. How safe in your mind is Elfline for this year? Because I think he's the default guy now, right? Because there's been no time to work on the field since 2019 came to an end, Courtney. But how safe do you think his job is? And is he sort of a holding place guy? Because, I mean, my faith since he got hurt in him is not great. And I feel like he just, unfortunately, might be cooked. I mean, it's not his fault.
No, I mean, it's the ankle injury, it's the shoulder. It's
but do you think he might just be, hey, we're going to plug in because we know you day one, but by week five, we might be going in a different direction at left guard?
Yeah, I think that it's a product of injuries. And the fact is, he was drafted to play center here. Yep. And, you know, moving him over to left guard, I just don't know if that was really the right move coming off of the injuries. Like, that 2018 season, he was not the same player. That's why he showed. Remember, he started on PUP in training camp, and it was this big mystery. Like Zim wouldn't say a whole lot about it. So of course, it created this like training camp conspiracy of like Pat Elflein, is he ever going to come back? Because that's when they lost Nick Easton because he broke his neck in practice. Remmers got hurt on a goal line drill. Like they were really hurting. So they needed Elflein back. And like I remember, he had the shoulder and he had the shoulder and the ankle, and he had to have both off-season surgeries for both, and he just really never recovered. And last year it was a Purple Daily show, and Alex Boone was on with us on a Tuesday. And I remember like looking through the first few weeks of the season, and I have it up right now. He had 32 pressures last year. And I think through the first four weeks of the season, because he didn't play week two when they were in Green Bay. I think he was hurt. He had 6 pressures, and like I remember Boone going through that, talking about Bradberry and the amount of pressures he'd given up and just the quarterback hits and Elflein too, with just like kind of that side of the line from center. And he's like, those are numbers that like tackles should be giving up like in an entire season. You know what I mean? Like, so I kind of felt like it was an issue back then that they just never were able to figure out, because Kirk Cousins doesn't have issues sensing the periphery pressure. I know it looks like it sometimes, especially when he's trying to throw a screen pass and gets the yips, but like that's not the issue. The issue has always been pressure coming up through the middle, the way that, you know, Akeem Hicks, Grady Jarrett, all those guys that he faced early on in the season last year would just push the pocket. He had nowhere to step up because his offensive lineman, the interior part of the offensive line, was really struggling to hold that pressure off. So you think immediately, okay, well, why don't they get better on the interior of the offensive line by trying out different guys? Well, I think that, you know, time is just really not going to let them do that, which you're right. I do think that Pat Elflein, solely going off of what Gary said the other day, we will be out there for practice eventually, I hope, that we'll actually get to see with our own eyes, like who's where, because you can't really tell at this point. But it feels like that's the inevitable safe option for now until somebody's able to surpass him.
Yeah, and obviously Kirk's not nimble enough to just flush out. When you watch the Seahawks' bad offensive line, it's very noticeable, but then Russell Wilson just flushes out and buys 5 extra seconds rolling to his right and makes a play down the field. And Kirk Cousins, it's not really his fault. Like, he was born with the legs that genetics gave him, and he needs
a
better left and right guard.
Can I use that one?
Between the two of us, we have a lot of genetic deficiencies.
It's God's fault.
Actually.
It's not my fault. It's God's fault. Go talk to God.
So on just circling back to Bradberry for a second too, what was your sense of, I mean, they obviously thought very highly of him to draft him where they did a year and a half ago. What is the consensus opinion from people you talk to, and whether it's Gary Kubiak and other coaches? Does the organization still feel as highly about Garrett Bradberry now as they did when they drafted him? Or was last year kind of a, ugh?
Well, I mean, he's undersized. Like, we knew that was going to happen at the center position. I mean, yeah, they did draft him very high at 18. So you expect, okay, that this guy's going to be pretty darn good. And I think he was. He had an up and down year. And you're playing against some really good interior defensive linemen in the NFC North. So you really could. I mean, he couldn't have picked like a worse division for him to start in. I'm sure he saw that when he got drafted, being like, crap, Snacks Harrison, all those dudes on the Packers defensive line.
Yeah, Clark in Green Bay is a nightmare.
Kenny Clark. Like, I mean, they were just, Akeem Hicks. He's probably thrilled that Akeem Hicks. Didn't Akeem Hicks opt out this season? Am I wrong about that?
No, another Bears player did.
I know who you're talking about.
Not Akeem Hicks, yeah.
He's probably wishing Akeem Hicks would have opted out this year.
Eddie Goldman. Eddie Goldman opted out.
That's right. I think that you give those guys a couple-year window. I mean, they did the same thing with Elflein, except that Bradberry didn't have the injuries that Elflein did, playing into, you know, an NFC championship game his first year in the league. So, you know, I think that you expect that there will be a jump from year 1 to 2. And we talked to him very briefly in the offseason. I want to say it was back in early June, just about his workout routine and, you know, working together with some of the offensive linemen. I think it was him, Aviant Collins, Dakota Dozier. They were all working up with Adam Thielen's gym and just trying to work together, because it's very difficult when you think about this pandemic and what it's limited guys doing on the field so far of, like, you can't play offensive line by yourself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you need somebody with a bag. You need somebody out there like next to you if you guys are working on different blocking schemes, whatever. So I think he was able to get some of that work in that like he, you know, maybe wouldn't have been able to had nobody been doing anything, like truly anything this offseason. So that's good. And it's definitely a benefit for someone like Garrett Bradbury. But I do think he will, at the end of the day, be in a much better spot than he was last year. But it's also going to be dependent upon who he's got on either side of him.
I hope you're right, because if he's not, it's going to be a big problem. If he was like a third round or fourth round pick, you'd say, oh, that's too bad. First round pick. What was Kubs trying to do on the Zoom call? Excuse me. I almost said conference call. That's really old school. What was he trying to do in terms of Drew Samia? Because he didn't meant... Because,
not much.
But this was a guy that we expect to possibly vie for or start at right guard. So has he really fallen out of favor, or was this a Zoom motivational technique by Kubs to light a fire below Samia in some way, shape, or form?
Well, I had asked O'Neal about Samia because the logical thought, Brian O'Neal talked to us before Gary Kubiak, like my thought process was, I know you haven't played a lot next to him because he had Josh Klein next to you last year. And even when he couldn't play, it was Dakota Dozier. But, you know, what do you think about Drew Samia? And he's saying that like he's, you know, you would infer that in walkthroughs and the little bit they've gotten on the field that Samia would be there at right guard. And it sounds like he is. It really does. Just at least with the first team right now.
Okay.
Granted, we don't know. Gigantic mystery, because he, I mean, Ezra Cleveland's working with the twos. That is what it is. I mean, it's either Drew Samia or Dakota Dozier there at right guard until we actually can lay our eyes on it. That's what I'm going with. But I think that, you know, I didn't really take a whole ton from the comments other than, you know, what does that mean for Drew Samia? If you have your second round left tackle playing right guard right now, does that mean that he's in jeopardy of not winning that job? And I think that that's probably what you could infer from that. But, you know, what O'Neal said is that he's a lot more confident this year. Like he knows what he's doing. He's walking around the, you know, he's in the building. He's, you know, talking with teammates. I mean, just kind of the natural like rookie to first, second year type jump that I think you expect from a guy like that. But he definitely, he's an intriguing one because he was such a good offensive lineman at Oklahoma in this exact same scheme and playing right guard before that you expected it would be such a seamless transition. But, you know, even last year when we were in training camp and everybody's like, oh, that's the right guard, Josh Klein's going to get cut. Like, we saw this every single day. He wasn't able to make that jump. So, you know, maybe that redshirt year that both he and Oli Udo got will give them a chance then to, you know, actually crack the starting five if possible.
So what, just overall, do you think the Vikings have any chance to sniff a top 10 offensive line in 2020 for the first time in like 8 years?
No, I don't think so. I think there's just so many pieces that are still not missing, but it's like you don't have the luxury of time to figure this thing out. Yeah. When we also on Purple Daily back in, I want to say March, you know, we were talking with Jeremiah Searles and I was asking him at the very same thing. I'm like, hey, like offensive linemen, like, you know, you usually come into camp looking like you come into like rookie mini camp looking like a pipsqueak. Obviously like bigger than me. So like, I mean, but all of them are. But like I look at them, I'm like, you're small. And by the time they come back to camp, they've got like 20 pounds on because all they're doing is eating peanut butter and jelly and drinking whole milk all summer.
God, that sounds like a dream.
Give me six Chipotles and that's just that. Lunch.
Yeah,
it'd
exactly.
It had to be almond milk for me. In the lactose, I don't know, but Judd too, probably. But other than that, yeah.
All the calories, though, that those guys drink have beer. To consume. And Searles talked about, like, the lockout year and just, like, you know, once it was go time, the rookies kind of fall back. You have to get your vets ready to go. And, you know, we were talking at that point with him about, okay, let's pretend, no, like, retrospect, no OTAs, no rookie mini camp, no anything, no mandatory mini camp. You get to training camp. He's like, you've got 6 weeks. You got to get your vets ready to go. Like, the rookies will fall to the wayside. So I think that all the stuff that they wanted to do, while I'm sure it's still probably in the plan somewhere, you have to be realistic about the time constraints you're dealt with here within this pandemic. And the fact that you're not getting on the field, probably we still don't even know the first day of training camp practice. It's probably not going to be till like August 17th. I know that like some other teams have talked about that Monday being the first padded practice for, I think the Saints are one of those teams. I would assume the Vikings will be in that same window, but if you've got like 3 weeks to get this thing together, you're not trying out a different offensive line combination every single day. So I think you do revert kind of back to status quo, which, you know, is a top 20 something offensive line. If it can get the job done, great, but you're also still leaving yourself kind of vulnerable and exposed if you don't fix those guard spots, because that's been the biggest issue for this team, you know, ever since I've been covering them.
That being said, how do you, if you're a team, Courtney, how do you wage training camp competitions and, more importantly than that, make decisions now? I mean, ordinarily they have mounds of practice. I mean, they film every practice and watch it back. They have preseason games. I mean, they have mounds of evidence to say the three guy is better than the two guys, so we're going to bump the three guy up. You know, I mean, there's just so many decisions made because these guys watch film constantly at night during training camp. That's all basically gone. How do you make decisions on, basically, it sounds like randomly probably, hey, I'm keeping him, I'm letting him go? Because you still got to get down to 53 in a practice squad.
You do. And I think that, you know, everybody wants to talk about like how difficult it is. And it's an easy storyline right now of like, what do you do? How do you get innovative? Like, they've got enough eyes on these guys that they can know, they can at least project like how good it could potentially be. I mean, they have scouts for a reason. They have a personnel department for a reason. Those people have been watching these dudes since, you know, for years. But as it comes down to the roster and what you see in training camp, I think what you see in training camp is pretty much going to reflect what you see on that 53, because you just don't have time to tinker. Like, just, you just don't. And, you know, a lot of UDFAs are not going to make this roster. A lot of lower round draft picks are probably not going to make this roster. You know, there could certainly be some veterans that are surprise cuts, but like, think about the defensive line, for example. Like, when I put out my 53 in like July 24th or something, we always do one pre-camp. And I'll do one again, like right before cut down day. Like, I had Shamar Stephan as a cut because I thought, okay, you know, he's getting the competition at three technique might overtake him because he's a two down lineman. And then I'm like, oh, well, that's not going to happen now because Michael Pierce opted out and changed the entire look of the defensive line and everything else. So, you know, they're probably going to have to hold on to those guys who are like veterans on the bubble simply because they know the offense, they know the defense, they know the scheme, and it's easier to get by with that than, you know, I know Mike Zimmer said that like for some of those second year guys, it's like, if there's a rookie that's better than you, we're going to try to go with that trajectory. Like, you're on notice. But I just think for a team that still wants to win games this year, it's not going to just be, well, these rookies are promising, these second year guys, you're out. Like, it's nice to say in theory, but I'll believe that when I see it.
So before we wrap this episode, I think the theme here is the Vikings offensive line is in another transition year. There's a lot to be determined, especially at the guard positions again. Dex, I'm going to do a screen share here, okay?
Yep.
So I want to show you the latest video. Actually, this is from a couple months ago, and he has actually sent me similar videos, literally just like excitedly texting me these things. This is Alex Boone, and here, I'll enlarge this here. This is Alex Boone, who has gained probably 40 pounds since the last time any of us saw him.
Oh my God, he's massive. I mean, like, just the shoulder.
Yeah.
Dude, he's 40 inch box jumps. Are you kidding me?
He's doing a box jump the size of Declan right now.
Yeah.
And
dancing at the top of it. When he came in studio, it definitely was in 2020 before the world turned upside down. Like, that was one of my first times meeting him in person. And he definitely looked like had the Joe Thomas going on.
Where yes.
Like, you were an offensive lineman, but now you look like a tight end because, you know, you don't eat that much. And I remember we were talking when he decided he wanted to try out for, you know, get back into the NFL and how much he was going to have to eat. And Judd brought up the Chipotles and the burritos. He definitely told us that. I was like, I could do this. But oh my God, look at him go. Like, good for him. His upper body, I mean, he looks like just jacked.
So he's, and by the way, there is zero chance that the Vikings would bring Alex Boone back just because of just the way it ended. I don't think he would go back. There would have to be some bridges mended there. But there's been teams that have shown interest in him, and even before COVID, I think where he got screwed a little bit here is he's the type of guy that you'd want to see work out in person and go against teams in the preseason.
100%.
And you can't do that during COVID. So
I know. I thought about that. Like, Matthew Collar and I were talking about that, you know, back in April, May, that time where it's like, man, how's Boone doing? Have you heard from him? And I just, like, you know, his coming back to the NFL really couldn't have happened at a worse possible time just because of all this like uncertainty we were dealt. Because in a normal year, you're right, he's the workout guy. He's the guy you're bringing in being like, all right, like, you want your second shot at this. Like, we want to see you work out. We want to see what you look like. We want to see how you handle the weight that you just put on your body, the whole thing. Like, I hope that doesn't hurt him in this long run. Like, I'm rooting for him. He's, you know, he's an awesome dude. But that is, I mean, look at the dedication and like, look how much his body's changed. I mean, that he's probably doing that like every day during quarantine. Just but you know what?
During the pandemic, my body's changed too. I've gained quite a bit of weight. I just don't look, it didn't go to the same places that Boonies did.
You're not jumping on boxes that are like 50 to 60.
No, he's breaking down beer boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what would happen to my hamstrings if I even attempted to jump on a box half that size, Courtney?
Athlete challenge.
I would be on the permanent IL of life.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, me too. No thanks.
Although, you know what? Boone, he's our buddy. The joke's on Boone, though, if he doesn't get signed, because he did all that. He gained 40 pounds of muscle for nothing. So hopefully he gets to a training camp at some point.
I know. I'm rooting for him. I hope he does, too.
So, all right, that's a wrap on this episode of Purple Daily. Courtney Cronin, you can follow her on Twitter and also Instagram, Courtney R. Cronin. Is it Courtney R. Cronin still on Twitter? Is that your handle still? Okay. And you can follow Judd Zolgad at Jay Zolgad, at Phil Mackey, at Dex's Tweets. And we'll see you next time on Purple Daily.